You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
She says she's from Paris. I don't believe that. Paris women don't give you a hard time like they do here. Till Paris woman, sex is an art.
I was in Paris once with my wife. Boy, am I glad she's dead.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 136 for the 18th of June, 2011. And it should come back. There it is. It's set for automatic, that one. So it should come back all by itself. Welcome to Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. And I am joined, by the way, I'm David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh. See, throughout my introduction with a black screen.
I was trying to be subtle.
Subtle as a brick. All right, let's start again. I'm Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yeah.
We're a bit plagued by technical issues today. We're having a bit of a jumpy feed, and we had a crash in the middle of the Geek Actually show. And
It's been fun.
We'll just kind of bluff our way through this and see what happens and keep going. Now, this week we are going to review the new comedy. Now, we don't do a lot of comedies because it's a hard one to review, but this is kind of a big hit.
It's not really something you can avoid.
You can't avoid this one. And we're going to review, of course, Bridesmaids, which is the new Judd Apatow-produced film directed by, give me his name?
Paul Feig.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're also going to do a little bit of film news, and we're also going to do a brand new list of five, which is kind of moving right out of Josh's comfort zone. So our list of five is going to be five comedies.
I've got them.
Oh,
I've
good. Okay. We're going to be doing five comedies with tender underbellies. Mm. So basically the idea is like Bridesmaids, where it's a funny film, but also has a little bit of heart behind it. Yeah. It has a little bit of soul. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to come back to that list a little bit later on. We do have a few things to talk about first off, though. We usually start the show by saying, first, what have we been watching? And two, feedback. Yeah. And so let's do feedback. We only have one for this show today, which is kind of refreshing after the last show, which is, hi, Josh and Dave. Just found this video while I was looking for stories for the Geek Actually show. This is from Delta Knight, by the way, our researcher for the Geek Actually show. And he said, and I just had to send in this feedback. Now, this is the feedback that if you remember listening to last week's show, he said, you didn't read my feedback. This is the feedback, all right? I'll let you guys explain this link as it pretty much explains itself. People shouldn't be assholes and use their phones in cinemas. Geek on, Delta Knight. And I have the link here, and we'll put the link in the show notes as well. What this is the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, which is a little boutique cinema in America, which shows films and serves food and stuff, has one simple rule.
Yeah.
The one simple rule is no texting or cell phones during a film.
Yeah.
You will be kicked out. Right? Simple as that. They make it very clear. Well, a woman got kicked out for texting with her phone, and then she called their voicemail line and left this message, which the Alamo Drafthouse decided to turn into a PSA.
Awesome.
And they now show the video on the screen to remind people. So here's the angry voicemail.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys actually enjoy treating your customers like a piece of shit, because that's how I felt when I went to the Alamo Drafthouse. Okay, you know what? I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to text in your little crappy-ass theater. It was too fucking dark in that place for me to find my seat, all right? I was using my phone as a flashlight to get to my fucking seat. So excuse me for using my phone in USA, United States of America, where you are free to text in a theater. I was not aware that I couldn't text in your theater, all right? I've texted in all the other theaters in Austin, and no one ever gave a fuck about what I was doing on my fucking phone, all right? And it was on silent. It wasn't on loud. It wasn't bothering anybody. You guys, obviously, were being assholes to me, and I'm sure that's what you do, you know, to rip people off. You take my money, and then you throw me out. You know, I will never be coming back to your Alamo Draft House or whatever. I'd rather go to a regular theater where people are actually polite. And, you know, I'm going to tell everyone about how shitty you are. And I'm pretty sure you guys are being assholes on purpose. So thanks for making me feel like a customer. Thanks for taking my money, asshole.
That's wonderful.
All right, so that's the PSA from the Alamo Draft House. I love the fact where she says, thanks for making me feel like a customer. I love what the video seers are seeing that the audio listeners aren't seeing what the video people are seeing, which is they put the text up on screen as it's saying. I love the fact that they put it up on screen with all the mistakes, like the maniacal of the United States. And when she goes, I'm going to a regular. Regular's the...
Good for you.
And I just sit there and go, good on you, Alamo Draft House. I hate it when people pull out their phones, even if they're on silent, you stupid bitch, because we see the light from the screen kicking up everywhere. And it's just it's annoying and it's irritating and it gets... Look, I just think, quite frankly, I think there should be like Faraday cages on all theaters. So that as soon as you go in, your phones don't work anymore. You know, I think that, safety zone. Turn your fucking phone off when you go to the movies. All right. Now that I've got that out of my system.
Yeah.
Green Lantern opened this week in America. Now, wisdom of Warner Brothers is remarkable in this situation because they've decided to hold the release of Green Lantern for Australia until August. So we have to wait for some time for this movie. But I think they may now realize they've made a huge mistake on this because... reviews have not been favorable.
I think that's being a little nice.
I think we should have a look at some of these, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. I have a couple here. This is from Rotten Tomatoes. So these are just a little encapsulated reviews. And I love the fact that let's have a look here. Let's just do some of the big ones. How about Globe and Mail?
Yeah.
Says the movie groans with the strain of explaining who Green Lantern is while also trying to sell the movie as big, eye-popping summer entertainment. What gets sacrificed on the altar of this new franchise launch is any real sense of fun. My favorite one, I think, was from the Philadelphia Inquirer that says, about as enjoyable as an explosion in the mold factory. And New York Post says, a relentlessly silly superhero flick with eyeball-rolling dialogue set in vast, familiar-looking digital realms that look like rejected models from the second Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, wow.
Washington Post, neither amusing nor exciting enough to ensure a long-running franchise.
Yeah.
And my favorite, actually, this is my favorite, I should say. Where is it? There's one here about Will, which is, I think, quite frankly. Now, I just got to point out while I'm trying to find this that we have been worried about this film since day one. That last trailer filled us with hope.
Yeah.
That last trailer was like, oh my God, this looks like it could actually be pretty good. Mm-hmm. But really, we have been talking for some time about how this does worry us a bit.
Yeah.
How about Dallas Morning News says Green Lantern opens with the words, billions of years ago. Take that as a sign of just how much time this ostensible action movie spends explaining itself. I love that.
Oh, that's mean.
Oh, it is. It's mean. There is something here about Will, and I can't find it off the top of my head. Oh, wait. Here it is. Boston Globe says, green, we're told at some point in Green Lantern, is the color of Will. Based on the movie surrounding that line, it's also the color of won't. Won't make sense, won't satisfy a soul, possibly won't make a dime.
Wow.
So I think Green Lantern is the movie equivalent of Duke Nukem Forever at this point.
Seems like it, man.
I would like to point out that it is now sitting at 24%. On Rotten Tomatoes.
Jesus.
With 150 reviews counted.
Oh, man.
So it is not sitting well. And just to add insult to injury, just to top it off, my son pointed this out to me this morning, and it's a last-minute addition. It's not even in the show notes. The Onion even had a go at them.
Yes.
And I thought, I have to play this on the show because this, quite frankly, is hysterical. So this is The Onion, which we all know isn't real. Okay, for those who are out there who think it might be real news.
Just in case you're wondering.
It's satire. But check this out. This is very funny stuff.
The big-budget blockbuster movie based on a comic book character called the Green Lantern finally hits theaters today. Madison Daly has the star fix.
Thanks, Andrea. According to Warner Brothers, Green Lantern is a superhero with fans around the world who everyone certainly knew about before they saw the movie's trailer. Now those fans will finally get to see the DC Comics superhero in his own cinematic adventure, presumably flying around and being green, among other things. Warner Brothers execs say the movie will remain faithful to the comic books, adapting a classic plotline in which the Green Lantern encounters a conflict and overcomes it using his lantern powers. Of course, the film will also feature the pink character who's mad at the Green Lantern about something and the other character with a big giant brain.
It really is a story that unites all of us. Young man living his life, then suddenly, boom, he's the Green Lantern and he's forced to deal with something.
Online buzz is building around the film's stars, including Blake Lively, whose name seems to have been floating to the top of lists of names you hear, and Ryan Reynolds, who recently told People magazine, quote, "I've been a Green Lantern fan ever since I was told I would be the person starring in the Green Lantern movie, so this is a thing come true for me." Moviegoers are already lining up for upcoming midnight showings.
Yeah, Green Lantern, sure, why not?
And they made that really nice trailer. Who am I to say I don't want to see this movie?
And a Green Lantern sequel is already rumored to be in the works due to the fact that this franchise has now been created. I know, I can't wait. I'm such a huge fan of the Green Lantern and his power ring.
Well, Madison, it looks like Greg Lantern is going to be a huge hit. Can't wait.
It looks like Greg Lantern's going to be a huge hit. Oh, I love it. I love the fact that they're really having a go at the fact that really, outside of the geek world, who cares?
It's unfortunate. Because
look, I think we can all say it at this point. Go Warner Brothers. You seem to have done it again.
No, look, I wish I could. I'm just really worried. I'm starting to get those because I saw that Parallax video we stuck up.
Yeah, yeah. Thing,
and to be honest, that just immediately made me go, and I'm out again.
Well, and one of the problems, of course, is that he's creating machine guns. Green Lantern's ring can't create combustible materials. It creates...
Yeah,
bludgeoning things, you know? Yeah. How does it create complex chemical creation, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't matter. Like, I'm not even going to go into that. I don't even know anything about the lore. I'm just saying that the actual CG doesn't work. He doesn't look like he's creating things. He looks like he's standing on one spot, and there's a whole bunch of CG around him. It's just, you can't separate fiction from reality with this. It's like, at least with the punch in the trailer, yeah. You kind of... get a sense that there's some momentum to it.
I will see the movie when it comes out. I will watch it, I will give it its due, and I will be fair to it. Mm. But at this point, things are not looking good. I haven't seen reviews that bad. Okay, the score is higher, marginally, but I haven't seen reviews that bad since Last Airbender.
Oh, dude, no, don't say that. Please, yeah.
These are the sort of comments that Last Airbender was getting.
Yeah.
So I am very concerned.
Yeah.
Let's just say we're very concerned.
Yeah.
Okay, Josh, what have you been doing this week? Anything interesting?
Well, I had my interview with Paul Figg.
Oh, yes.
Yes, which was great. And as I said in the show beforehand, he's a really nice guy. Top bloke, and definitely it's nice to see him finally get a film off the ground because he's tried a few serious films, but a lot of what he's remembered for is work on The Office and stuff like this. So for him to actually finally get that film, which really worked, good for him. It'll be interesting to see where it goes from there. And apart from that, man, I've just been watching the Phantasm series, Celine High Five. Yes. we're 3 films out of 4 down now, and we've decided we've changed our tone completely. It is the best films ever made.
I really like, now, I don't remember which number it is. It might be 3.
Yeah.
It's the one that starts with a really staggering credit sequence with the light behind the words as it comes out of screen.
Maybe even 4, because I don't think 4? I've seen that.
Yeah, no, and I really quite enjoyed that one. It was one of the later ones in the series.
It's interesting because the thing that you realize is it's kind of the anti-film. That's what you realize when you start watching it. You're like, this film is just trying to be everything against film. You have no idea as a film lover what's coming. You just, you know, throw all your preconceived notions of film out the window because there's going to be solid steel balls flying around and they're not going to explain that shit. It's just going to appear out of nowhere and you're going to be like, what the shit did that come from? And that sort of stuff is just scattered throughout the entire scene. And the characters they bring in are just warped. In 3, you've got a kid who's like a gunslinger and you're like, I don't even know why you're here, but go nuts. Let's just see what you can do with this one. The further I go through it, it's like watching Life Force, but it's kind of like it never set out to even be good.
No,
like
that's
it's
true,
just
yeah.
it set out to go.
It was B grade fair from the beginning.
Exactly. They were like, "What's B grade, man? We're gonna take it to Z grade and then keep going." It's just. Yeah, loving it so far. Going to keep enjoying those the further I get through them. Definitely looking forward to 4.
Oh, fantastic. All right, but the only thing that I can really say that I watched of significant... I mean, I watched a lot of movies this week, of course.
I don't know if it can be as significant as Phantasm, mate.
I got invited by Paramount to go and have a look at a screening uh-huh. of 20 minutes of 3D footage for Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah.
So we rocked down to the Paramount... Theaterette mm-hmm. on Friday,
yeah.
and they gave us a presentation of what it was going to be like. Now, I have to say, let's state right up front, but we've said this many times on the show, I love the first Transformers, I hated the second Transformers, and they promised us that this one will be a better film.
I can't remember the last time I walked out of a film and actually just went... That was racist.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know.
Really racist. Yeah. And
there was a lot of problems with Transformers, yeah. too. And racism was one of the many problems. Mm. Now, so I've been kind of holding judgment on Transformers 3 because, really, it's Michael Bay doing his first 3D mm-hmm. film to start with. Two, they all promise it's going to have a better story and you know, and all that sort of stuff. And there were issues. Transformers 2 was made during a writer's strike. And, you know, there's a lot of factors behind it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give them – I don't want to try and forgive what happened. But they didn't do a very good job. However, sitting down and watching 20 minutes of this 3D footage. Now, for those who don't know, when Michael Bay decided that he was going to make this in 3D, he was actually asked to make Transformers 2 in 3D. He declined because he said, I can't shoot in 3D. It doesn't suit my shooting style, which makes sense because he shoots very fast, very kinetic, and he cuts a lot, and it's not really not really healthy for 3D.
No,
basically.
It's really not.
James Cameron got wind that he wanted to do Transformers 3 in 3D, so he got in contact with him, and James Cameron basically assisted the 3D aspect of it. The entire camera crew that worked on Transformers 3 is the same camera crew that did Avatar.
Right.
And it shows.
Yeah.
Now, I'll just say straight off the bat that about 30% of the film, from what I understand, is actually post-convert because they literally couldn't get the cameras to do what Michael Bay wanted the cameras to do. So they had to post-convert small portions of the film. Excuse me. But he did say in an interview that I saw recently that they spent months and months and months finding the best post-conversion house they could. They really took their care to make sure the post-conversion looked as good as the main stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw was the entire opening sequence of the film all the way up to the opening title. So about the first 6 minutes of the film. Then they showed us a montage of all the big action sequences. Mm-hmm. There was no narrative. There was no structure to the story. So I can't tell you what that's like. But we got to see a whole bunch of the stuff that basically extended stuff that we've seen in the trailers. Mm. And it is spectacular.
Mm.
This is the best 3D since Avatar.
Yeah.
There is no doubt in my mind. Mm-hmm. He has a sequence in the film where he's got the Marines basically going in with wingsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing it in CG... Mm-hmm. Bless his heart, Michael Bay wanted to use real skydivers and actually put them through the streets of Chicago, and he did. He got the best team in the world, and they strapped 3D cameras to their helmets and flew through the streets of Chicago at 100-something miles an hour, and it is spectacular in 3D.
Yeah.
It made my feet just curl, you know, because awesome. You're pretty high in the air there, dude. You know, so that sort of stuff is fantastic, and it really gives me hope that even if the film is a little lackluster or what have you, at least I think we're going to be in for a visual treat.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of at this point is all I can really say about the film because we haven't seen any narrative. Hopefully, we'll get to see full screening soon, and then we'll be able to do more on this film. But at this point in time, all I can say is it looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It looks brilliant.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big news of this week. I'm going to put a write-up about it on the site over this weekend sometime. You'll be able to read that.
Yeah.
It was a very impressive 20 minutes of just eye candy. You know, it's just pure eye candy. And Michael Bay has really gone for depth.
Yeah.
So he's not doing the whole... There's one sequence which is a little cheesy where somebody holds a gun out to the camera. But on the most part, he's gone for depth. He's gone for big, deep shots.
Yeah.
You know? And that's that sort of 3D
and
really excels.
That's what makes 3D work. Yeah.
So lots of big cityscapes with incredible depth of field. So, all right. So that's kind of the most impressive thing I've done this week. I will also say that I watched Pirates of the Caribbean 2 again last night, which I actually quite enjoyed. It's funny when you go back and watch films that people were so hard on.
Mm.
And you go back and watch them later with all the hype out of it, out of the equation, and you just go, yeah, it was kind of fun.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. It's kind of fun. And it actually has my favorite line in the entire series, though, with Jack looking at the Kraken and going, hello, beastie. All right, let's move on to our feature review this week. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't guessed by now, it is the film Bridesmaids. Oh, by the way, I should say that the opening clip we opened with is from the film The Sure Thing, which is an early John Cusack film directed by Rob Reiner, which I really enjoy. And that is actually one of my favorite scenes in the entire film. That's a small portion of an extended scene of him and these two drunks at a bar, which is just the stuff coming out of their mouth is just gold. So do catch up with The Sure Thing if you get a chance. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to talk about Bridesmaids, directed by Paul Feig. Is that right?
Fig. Just Fig.
Fig, okay. Paul Fig, and written by Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo. Mamolo. There it is, Mamolo.
Yeah.
It stars Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Rose Byrne, Wendy McLendon Covey, Ellie Kempar, Chris O'Dowd, Matt Lucas, Rebel Wilson, who is, interestingly enough, Australian but doing an English accent, and Jill Clayburgh. It also has an uncredited performance by John Hamm, which I thought I was very curious as to why he's not credited. Now, Jill, it's really nice seeing Jill Clayburgh back on the screen again. All right. Annie is a maid of honor whose life – now, this synopsis comes from our regular source now on IMDb, known as Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And Anonymous writes, not the same Anonymous, I'm sure. Annie is a maid of honor whose life unravels as she leads her best friend Lillian and a group of colorful bridesmaids on a wild ride down the road to matrimony. Annie's life is a mess, but when she finds out her lifetime best friend is engaged, she simply must serve as Lillian's maid of honor. Though lovelorn and broke, Annie bluffs her way through the expensive and bizarre rituals. With one chance to get it perfect, she'll show Lillian and her bridesmaids just how far you'll go for someone you love. And that's the first half of the film.
I would even argue that that's not kind of where it heads either.
No, it heads into a very different direction than that. Yeah. We'll talk about that in the review. Here's the trailer. Now, I will point out one thing about this trailer that intrigued me. There's actually a scene in this trailer that is not in the film. We're not even talking about one line or one clip. There's a scene in this trailer that is not in the film, which is the kid with the birth control pills. So all I could think is that there will be a extended version on
most
DVD.
Probably.
All right, here's the trailer for Bridesmaids.
You're going along with your life and you look around and you notice like, oh, I am in my 30s. I have $40,000 in debt. I live with a weirdo.
You do have a super creepy roommate.
You read my diary?
At first, I did not know that it was your diary. I thought it was a very sad handwritten book.
Are you coming over tonight? I have big news.
Ooh, I can't wait. I'm engaged.
What?
Will you be my maid of honor?
Of course!
You'll love the rest of the bridesmaids.
I'd be more than happy to handle the bachelorette and the shower.
I think I can handle it.
Annie, what is this place?
I know it looks a little scary on the outside. The food here is really, really good.
Oh, look, you can get a check cash next door. Come
on. Helen, aren't you having any meat?
It's not good to eat a big meal before a fitting.
This is some classy shit. I want to apologize. I'm not even confident of which end that came out of.
You got food poisoning from that restaurant.
No.
Everybody, go outside.
Be careful. We all got the flu. Such a coincidence.
I feel like her life is going off and getting perfect, and mine's just like...
I need you to touch your nose with your finger.
If I was drunk, would I be able to do this?
I would hope so.
I wanted to go over some ideas for the bachelorette party.
I was thinking Las Vegas.
Strip club.
Disney World.
Fight club.
Go to a fight club?
No, we're not going to go to a fight club.
Okay.
We're going to be the fight club.
Vegas it is.
I'm a nervous flyer, I'm sorry.
I had a dream last night that we went down. You were in it.
What?
You should just toss it back.
I'm ready to party!
You're like the maid of dishonor.
I was gonna leave you till you kissed me. I wanted to leave you till you kissed me.
You're gonna take this huge step, and I'm gonna be there right next to you.
I am dead.
Shame.
Dead serious.
Will you marry me?
Yes.
Do you have a date for the wedding?
Because I have a great guy for you.
Then I just hang down here with my son Tyler and be back in a minute?
Sure. Did you eat one of those?
I ate Saturday.
Okay, so that's the trailer for Bridesmaids. And yes, that little clip at the end with the birth control pills is not in the film, so don't look for it. Like, did you eat one of those?
I ate Saturday.
I wish that was in the film. It was very funny. All right, let's start off by saying that I really enjoyed this. Mm. Now, I'm a big comedy fan. I like a good comedy. I like to have a good laugh. I like the sensibilities of the Apatow factory. Mm. I've liked a lot of the films that have come out of that factory.
Yeah.
And I think it holds up well. It's Kristen Wiig is a person who I always thought was kind of odd. Mm-hmm. She always played very odd characters. And over the last couple of years, she's been given more chance to do other stuff.
Yeah.
And she is actually fast becoming a favorite of mine. I think she's got a really nice energy about her. Mm-hmm. And this is really her vehicle. She really is using this as a vehicle to showcase herself.
Well, interestingly enough, it's not actually the way it was going to go down, because when I was actually talking to Paul, he was saying that she has a tendency to kind of want everyone else to be really funny. Mm. And it was kind of like, they had to make sure that the vehicle was as strong for her as it was. So she seems very selfless, which is a nice thing
as well, yeah.
But yeah, no, look, you know I don't like comedies, and I actually really, really like this, because it's just like there's enough of both. And I think one of the important things, as Paul was saying, it's like you've got to get your dialogue and your emotion right first, mm-hmm. and then you put your jokes in afterwards. And that's a real truth to this film. It's like they've got the storyline and the arc of the emotional sort of roller coaster of feelings in place, and then the jokes are kind of fitted in on top. And the jokes are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, and I think we make it very clear for those people out there who don't usually watch films that are called Bridesmaids and have pink titles and are a bunch of women, and they sit there and go, oh, it's going to be some, you know, chick flick, right? Mm. This isn't. This is actually a really clever film, which happens to be about women. Mm. And Fig has done a really good job of casting five or six very talented women.
It's just really nice to see a full movie which is based around a bunch of female comedians. You just don't get that. You might get one with the two leads being female or something like that, and then the rest of the cast is sporadic. Yeah. It's like this is a large group of intensely funny girls.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge Rose Byrne fan, but she is also very funny in this.
Exactly, because it's a good set of roles, and it's everybody's been typecasted perfectly.
There's a line from Rose Byrne I love where she's sitting there, she starts crying, and Kristen Wiig starts to laugh, and she goes, why are you laughing? She goes, because you finally look ugly. And Rose Byrne goes, I look ugly. No, I don't. I just, under her breath, she's always like, no, I don't, really. Yeah. It's a very funny film. It's very, it's a sensitive film. It has a soul. It's got, amongst all the mayhem and things that go on with trying to organize this wedding, there is a real sense of self to this film. It really knows what it wants to say. Mm. And there is a growth to the character that Kristen Wiig is playing with the development of her relationship with the police officer, who, I gotta say, I really love. What's his name? Dowd. Give me a second. Chris O'Dowd. As the cop, who she starts to form this little relationship. He's such a sweet character, you know?
Well, he's such an interesting character because he is borderline creepy in some ways.
Because he seems to be the only nice person around.
He's also a very odd character, and that's kind of why. It's like, you know, it's not usually the sort of person you put forward. You put the romantic, you know, huge, buff, nice guy that's got 1,000 levels of depth, and it's like you've got this character who's not necessarily standout-ish.
Yeah, and they take the huge, buff, gorgeous guy that everybody's in love with, which is John Hamm,
and they make him
a pig.
And John Hamm is fantastic in this film. His line at the start where he starts laughing, she's like, what's up? He's like, oh, this is so awkward. I want you to leave, but I don't know how to say it without being a dick. And I just think that's great. He plays an asshole so perfectly, it's not even
funny.
When
he pulls up at the porch, he goes, hey, fuck buddy. It's like you're just awful in every way.
I like the ideas it tries to tell. I think the stupid comedy is funny enough, and it doesn't sort of overboard itself, which I like. I like the fact that there is a level of kind of drama to it between everyone that things go down. And it's a really believable kind of a story. And it's the kind of thing you can imagine someone telling you about the recent weekend. And you're like, wow, that's pretty messed up, dude. It's just, it's fun. It's interesting. It's intelligent. It's well designed. I mean, you can understand. It hits every market. It's like people are saying to me, oh, well, you know, I didn't like the humor. And some people are going, oh, I didn't think they needed any of the romantic stuff. They should have just stuck with the comedy. It's like, but the reality is you all enjoyed it.
And I think what happens is they say that. But if you then took out the romance or if you took out the sensitive parts of it, what you're left with is a film that feels incomplete. You feel you've just got a series of jokes. Yeah. And we've seen lots of films like that. Mm. When a film like this works is because it does find that middle ground where it goes, we can be funny, but we can also have, we can also tell a story that might touch you and might actually tell you something, you know, about growth, about characters growing. Mm. I love the fact that her mother, played by Jill Clayburgh, who we haven't seen on screen in quite some time. Jill Clayburgh was an Academy Award winning, I believe, actress in the 70s for an unmarried woman. I love the fact that she goes to AA meetings. And she goes, you're really not supposed to go to this because you're not an alcoholic. She goes, that's just because I don't drink. That's a great line, you know? And her mother is a basket case. Yes. You know? I love the fact that everybody is slightly damaged in some way. But I think we can't go any further without addressing the elephant in the room, which is, of course, Melissa. Melissa, do you know what? I actually don't think I put her name in the credits. I missed her. I can't believe I did that. Isn't that terrible? Melissa McCarthy. So for that cast list I said at the beginning, I just forgot to put her name in. Yeah. But Melissa McCarthy is going to be a star. She plays Megan in this film, who is the sister of the husband-to-be.
Yeah.
So they have to adopt her as a friend just because she's always there.
Yeah.
But this woman is a loony bin. And I gotta say, straight off the bat, she resembled a female version, a female dumpier version of Ricky Gervais.
I disagree because she has this great love and life to her, whereas Ricky Gervais is such. No, he doesn't. He's an absolute dick in everything he plays. No, but he does. He plays a dick. That's what he plays.
No, but
he
got that same. What I mean by Ricky Gervais though, is that same kind of timing, that same kind of, that same sort of feel about her when she delivers.
I just love the way she's like this, and I don't mean as a size thing. I mean as a voice, as a tone. She has this very heavy set feel to it. Yeah. It's like she's like a bulldozer
bandaged. Yeah. Like for a lot of the film, she's got her hand in a bandage, or she's got
she's like, just that person that you know that's like adorable and really nice, but really full on. And she has some of the most touching moments of the film, but at the same time, has some of the best comedic moments.
And you saw her in the trailer, of course, that scene where she's at the bridal fitting, and she
just gets worse,
makes that
but
burp,
better.
And she goes, "I want to apologize, but I'm not even sure what end that came out of." And that scene just gets the scene where she's trying to roll onto the couch. Back. Her timing, her physicality, she is brilliant in every way, and I could watch her over and over and over again just doing what she's doing. And in our news section coming up, we have some news about her, so we'll come back to that. But she is the one to watch here. She is the star in the making. She is to this film what Seth Rogen was to 40-year-old Virgin. You know, she was the film where you sit there and go, you're going places, you know?
Yeah.
Now, she is fantastic and well worth keeping an eye on. Yeah. I think about her and the guy on the plane. She's convinced that this guy is a Sky Marshal. And he's going, but I'm not a Sky Marshal. She's going, right, sure.
The two of them were fantastic. I love the dialogue between them. And then the final scene after the credits, that's just a little
wink. Oh, yeah.
Check out. It's disgusting. It's horrible, but it's amazingly funny.
But it's amazingly funny, yes.
I can't say a bad thing about this film. I mean, there is a bit of timing I don't like, and I think the first bit drags a little bit, but it's important for character setup. It's like it's the more drama-y moments.
But in that opening scene, though, you do have that little restaurant scene, which you see a little bit.
It's very kind of like off the cuff. It's very, sort of like sporadic kind of comedy. You can imagine that being a stand-up act. So it's like I wasn't into the film at that time. I was like, yeah, okay, cool, fine, whatever. But it's sort of after that, from then on, it sort of just picks up. Yeah,
I will say that for its MA rating, because there are people who are going to say, oh, but it's rated MA, it's going to be really raunchy. It's actually not that raunchy.
Yeah.
It has a few moments where you sit there and go, ooh, that's pushing the boundaries a little bit. And there is some language in it.
Yeah.
I think the C word is mentioned twice in this film. So, there is some raunchy language in it. It's not for the young ones.
Yeah.
But it is well worth having a look at. It is very funny. And I'm sure, like all of Apatow's productions, there will be an extended, unrated cut on DVD, Blu-ray when it comes out. Because that's what he does.
Yeah.
There's always stuff left on the cutting room floor. Both, from what I understand, both Apatow and Fig both shoot tons and tons and tons of just... like ad lib, and then they cut it together later to see what comes
Apparently
out.
He doesn't even like saying cut. He's just like, just keep going, just do it again, do another take. So you can imagine you would end up with this huge amount of footage.
Yeah, because Apatow actually said when he did 40-Year-Old Virgin, what's on screen is only about 40% scripted.
Yeah.
Because he would just literally roll the cameras and just let all these comedians just riff and see what would happen. You know, and that's a lot of what's in there is just the comedians riffing.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I think that we've got a lot of that here, too. It is good fun. I was about to say good clean fun, but it's not really good clean fun. It's good fun. It's not particularly clean, but it is well worth having a look at.
Yeah.
I think we both recommend this film quite heavily.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to some news. And I'm going to just rearrange the order here because I've got them in the wrong order here and just say that Melissa McCarthy news that we were talking about. Paul Feig, who directed Bridesmaids, has now actually said his next film will probably be a rom-com starring John Hamm and Melissa McCarthy. Now, is that an odd couple for you or
that
what?
That movie and the plot line to it just sounds like it's going to do one of two things. If he gets it right, and for God's sake, I hope he does, because he's got the greatest people to work with
this. Absolutely.
But it's kind of like... if it works really well, you might get a really different new movie. If you get it wrong, you'll get Shallow Hal. And I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's not
good. And it's like, it's all about how you present your comedy, because it is a difficult situation. It's like, have you read the background storyline?
I was just actually going through it now.
Ham's the one that's interested in her.
Which I think is so refreshing.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's like he's fallen in love with her, and she's kind of like, you know, not necessarily in on it. And it's sort of... that could be a really interesting subject matter.
When they toss things up like that and they give things a different spin. Yeah. So I like Fig said that he thinks that John Hamm is the new Cary Grant because he is funny and so effortless.
Yeah.
And he said of McCarthy, she is just a force of nature.
Oh, dude, isn't she just so?
And I just think that is such a wonderful way of referring to her.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I just state right now here for the record, Superman, the Man of Steel... is not an origin story.
Yeah.
They've said that. Yeah. We've heard that a few times, right?
About seven or eight times.
It's been a while since we've had any Superman news, so it's not an origin story, though. Right?
Yes.
Not an origin story. Right. Well, according to Variety this week, Russell Crowe is currently in talks to join the cast of Superman, the Man of Steel, as Jor-El.
The father.
The father. On Krypton.
Yeah.
Before he gets jettisoned to Earth.
Isn't that awesome, though? We've got, on one end of the scale, we have Marlon Brando, and then we have Russell Crowe. And, of course, they're huge amounts alike.
Yeah, they're very similar, I think.
I think that's going to be effortless for him, too, to fill the shoes.
And then
of
somewhere
Brando.
In the middle here, we've got Pa Kent being played by Kevin Costner. Can I tell you that I think that the Man of Steel is a train wreck waiting to happen?
Wow. I just don't know what
they're going on. And after the performance of the Green Lantern, I'm not sure if the Warner Brothers production execs actually know what they're doing. So, I think Russell Crowe is in talks to play Jor-El. Apparently, it's looking good at this point, and he may be joining the cast.
Yeah.
I just think this is horrific news. I don't know. I don't see... let's think about it. Jor-El is supposed to be one of the greatest scientific minds of Krypton.
Yep.
I don't see Russell Crowe as one
beautiful
of the greatest...
I'm sorry. That was really mean.
That was really mean because that was a terrible film. I really didn't like A Beautiful Mind at all. Not one of my favorite Ron Howard films. I can tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's shake that off a little bit and say that The Muppets are back again.
Yes.
You know, all right, so the Muppets, they've now parodied rom-coms.
Yeah.
They've now parodied Hangover Part 2 in this trailer campaign. Yeah. And this week, their new one came out. Does this look familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
In brightest day, in darkest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who laugh at my lack of height beware my banjo, Green Froggy's light.
Sorry about that, guys. Something in my throat.
We need you!
Come on, guys, let's go!
Muppets, it looks like the joke's about to be on them.
If I didn't know better, I'd say you were reciting some sort of an important plot point.
Wait, stop. Is this another Muppet trailer parody? Why don't we just show a real trailer? I mean, what are we hiding? Did we make the movie in Swedish or something?
Not in Swedish, we promise. I love that. All right, so yes, the Muppets, we're still waiting for an actual trailer, but they seem to be having an awful lot of fun parodying everybody else's trailers out there. Yeah. I am so looking forward to the Muppets, I can't tell you. I think the idea of the Muppets join forces with the creative force behind Forgetting Sarah Marshall, we're onto a winner here. Yeah. all right, what else we got? Oh, yes, this was a very interesting article that came out. FirstShowing.net, I read it on FirstShowing.net. I'm not sure who originally published it, but they got it. Basically, it was an interview with McCallum, the producer of the new Star Wars trilogy, who basically said that because they're doing the 3D conversions on the Star Wars films from first to last, they're going to put out Phantom Menace next year, and if it doesn't do well, then they won't do any more conversions.
Now, so, we are talking about Star Wars here,
Star
right?
Wars, yeah.
Not doing well.
Yeah, well, this is the point I was about to say was, I don't care who you are, and I don't care what you thought of the film. Everybody sits there and goes, I hate that movie. But you know everybody is going to go see it. You know, they're all
going to
line up
because
they're
going to want to go see it. Honest.
They're going to want to go see the pod race in 3D.
You know what? I'm not.
Really? I'm going to be there.
First three, definitely not watching again. Just because I just don't want to spend more money on it. It's like I've seen it once.
You buying
it didn't
Blu-rays
click.
In September?
Nope.
No, I am.
Not of 1, 2, and 3.
We'll buy the complete set.
Yeah. And, dude, I get it. And I'm, you know, you like it or you don't like it. That's your call, realistically. But in my eyes, I just have no interest in watching it again. I've watched them. They didn't sit with me. I will never watch them again. Just like I would never watch Transformers 2 again because I have no interest in it.
I'm actually going to watch that again.
Ah, you sick person.
No, I have to watch it again. I haven't actually seen it since the cinema, but I felt like if I'm about to go see Transformers 3, I'm going to watch 1 and 2 again.
Yeah.
I am going to sit down and watch 1 and 2 again. And you know what? I might actually like 2 more now. You never know.
You never
know what
know.
I mean? I don't think it's ever going to be a good film, but it may not be as quite as soul-destroying as the first time I saw it because, you know, anticipation is gone.
I can't wait to find out what you thought.
I will let you know as soon as... I've got to go find a copy. I don't even have that film, so I've got to go rent it or something. So basically what McCallum is saying, Rick McCallum is saying that they want to do all 6 films in 3D conversions and post-convert 3D. They're doing, you know, they've been working on it for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But realistically, if the first film doesn't work, if they don't make enough money on it to warrant doing this, then they won't do the rest of the films. So all I can think is if you're really going to do that, if you're really going to have that mentality, why wouldn't you start with episode 4? Why wouldn't you start with a film that everybody wants to see?
No, because they know if they don't put out the first 3 first, people won't go see them.
Well, there is that. Must you bring up Transformers 2, says Danny Danielle. Thank you. I do have to bring it up every now and again. By the way, we haven't said it for this show. We do record this show live, even though we're having some feed problems this week.
Can we just call her Triple D? It's much quicker.
Thank God you said Triple D.
I know.
We will call you Triple D from now on.
You have a nickname.
There you go.
Be thankful.
We could just call her Danny.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'll ask her what she wants. She can get back to us.
We do have a chat room. We go out live every week. We start the recording day at
12. That's what we're banging on about right now. People yeah, in a chat
of,
room.
Yeah, kind of. And we have a live chat room, and you can come and join us anytime you want to. Go to geekactually.com/live, and the film show usually starts around the 1:30, between 1:30 and 2 o'clock mark. We tweet it out, though. So follow us on Twitter. Find all that stuff on geekactually.com. All right, look, it's really a non-story, but basically I think they're shot themselves in the foot. But at the same time, I would also say that I don't believe that Phantom Menace won't make $100 million in re-release.
Yeah?
It will make $100 million in re-release. When they put out the 20th anniversary Star Wars films, when they did all the digital manipulations, they made $100 million at the box office. Star Wars films always make $100 million at the box office, you know? Because there are enough rabid Star Wars fans, even those who don't particularly like the original trilogy, who will still pay to see it just so they can see it on the big screen, you know? They want to see lightsabers on the big screen. It's as simple as that, you know? So I don't think he's got anything to worry about. And the article is almost written in a way that makes it feel like he's basically saying, I challenge you. All right, so now this is another piece of news that I was a bit in the what the fuck kind of mentality when I read this. But basically, a guy has written a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Now let me find the details here. Back in 2007, this is an article that was on Slash Film, which they got the original material from a site called Stuck in the 80s blog.
Yeah.
Okay, now, apparently a sequel was written by a writer called Rick Rapier. Great last name.
Yeah.
For a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Now, apparently the script picks up 20 years later.
Yeah.
And it says that Ferris has become a famed motivational speaker with best friend and business partner Cameron by his side, Rooney still stalking him from afar, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Ferris is feeling unfulfilled and he decides to take his 40th birthday off.
Yeah.
So, therefore, the sequel. Okay. Yeah. Now, this has been kicking around for a while, but according to his site, he's now put out an article, a thing saying, "Wish I could tweet names of people reading my Ferris Bueller sequel, but your jaws would drop. I'm stoked." So it looks like there's all new interest in this. My question is, will they get back Mia, Sarah, Matthew Broderick, and the guy who played Cameron?
I reckon Broderick would do it if it was the right script.
Broderick is just doing nothing but Broadway nowadays. I don't know if he'd come back and do. I mean, what was the last film he was in?
Yeah, but there's a certain sense, and we've talked about this before, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, if you could re-spark that, there is something about that film that everyone can universally understand. It's just the concept of just giving up the day-to-day and just going out and doing something. There is not a man alive that doesn't get that feeling.
I agree with you 100%. I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but here's one question for you, and this is probably the most probably the most important question of all.
Yeah.
If you take a film like Ferris Bueller and you rip out of it the one thing that is probably the most driving thing in that film...
What?
Which is John Hughes.
Yeah.
Will it work? John Hughes had a certain way about him.
But John Hughes has also made shit films. So.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Ferris Bueller here.
No, and I know that, man. I get that. But it's like...
It's like trying to do a sequel to The Breakfast Club without John Hughes. You know what I mean?
Look, it may take on a different life, but I mean, it is 20 years on, 30 years on, so it's kind of like the film... The people, you know, it would feel different either way because, I mean, like, these people are older. They're not going to look the same way. He's a motivational speaker. He's not happy with his life. So, you know, maybe he's not the same sort of person. I'm just saying, let's just not say no to this until we at least see
I'm curious. I am very curious. I worry because whenever you do a sequel like this, this is the sort of sequel. Are you ready? Does this sound familiar?
Oh, God.
This is the sort of sequel that people say, oh, you ruined my childhood.
Ah, yes.
You know, this
yes,
is the sort
is.
Of sequel to a film that is so beloved
and
is so far in the past that you now get to a point where if you fuck this up, people get mad.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
this is
enough.
Duke Nukem all over again, you know? I just wonder if you really want to mess with something as beloved as Ferris Bueller. You know, it's just, what's our chat room saying? Danny is saying, Ferris Bueller ditches work, it should be called. Okay, fair enough. That's absolutely true. Cameron overthrows Ferris and steals his hot girlfriend. Yeah, well, there's that too. Although, have you seen Mia Sarah lately? Like, she's not so hot anymore, guys. All right. Danny says, Broderick will do it if it's a musical. He might get to sing Dankeschön again.
Either way, it'd be funny.
All right. That's enough on Ferris Bueller, I think. Yeah. But yes, I think it's an intriguing idea. I don't know if I entirely think it's going to work. That's my biggest issue.
Yeah.
I just worry about any film that has had this much water under the bridge and, as I say, is beloved. You get problems. Okay, we got one more trailer, and then we're going to do our list of five. This is a kind of short show today, guys, but we've done so many long shows that Josh and I have tried to keep things as compressed as possible this week. Now, final trailer, a final trailer for Harry Potter has come out. Now, this is the last trailer before the film's release, which I think is coming out in, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yep.
It's almost here. This pretty much covers the same sort of ground as that last trailer, but there's a few extra shots. It's still very dramatic. I am really looking forward to watching this and being able to review Deathly Hallows as a one film, not so much even by its own.
Yeah.
But let's have a look at this. This is the Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 final trailer. Okay, here we go.
Harry, be safe. Be strong. Join me and confront your fate.
You've kept him alive so that he can die at the proper moment.
Bring him to me.
Let's find out where he is. If we find him, we can end this.
I say we jump now! Hogwarts is threatened! Protect us!
I have to go back, haven't I?
It's a suicide mission. The boy who lived, come to die.
Tell them how it happened that night. How you looked him in the eye. A man who trusted you. And killed him.
I never wanted any of you to die for me. You'll stay with me.
Always.
Until the end.
No!
Come on, Tom. Let's finish this the way we started.
Together!
Okay, now, I just got to say something about all this really quickly. And this is, I was thinking about this the other day, and I brought it up with my lovely wife, Katie. And I just got to get this off my chest on the show. So I got to mention this. I think Warner Brothers needs to be commended. We've been bashing Warner Brothers about their handling of superheroes and stuff like that. But I really think at this point, Warner Brothers needs to be commended. When you actually think of Harry Potter and the Harry Potter films, something that nobody really talks about or considers is this is a franchise that has actually was started 10 years ago. It has had a consistent cast all the way through it, except for the fact that Richard Harris dying and a replacement of Richard Harris. It's gone through, what, four different directors' hands. And they have not only managed to maintain the quality of Harry Potter, but improve on the quality of it. They've managed to hold on to a group of child actors into adulthood, you know. I think there's something to be commended of it. It is actually a really incredible, epic 10-year journey that they took with this, and they never gave up on it. And sure, the films made a ton of money, but they could have cut corners at any time. Once it started making so much money, they could have basically done anything they wanted. But they chose to maintain a level of quality on it.
Yeah.
I do think their choice of splitting the last book in two was a bit cheap.
Yeah.
But with that exception, they're still really well-made films. I just think it should have been one film. You know what I mean? And so I sit there and go, I really have to applaud Warner Brothers for actually managing to make an entire series of books. into a plausible, working, cohesive series of films.
Yeah, and look, like him or lump it, and you've got to respect it in the same way that, you know, like they, the best series in the world struggle to make seven films that not only work but keep the fan base, and there's very little argument from people that these films, well, people that enjoyed the stories.
That's right. Fans of the books have liked the exactly. films. People who haven't read the books have liked the films, you know? Yes, there are people who go, oh, bloody Harry Potter, who cares? But on the most part, they have really really succeeded in adapting a very successful series of books into a very successful series of films and made them stand on their own.
Damn right.
You know? And I think they really do need to be commended for this. This has been an amazing journey. And I can't wait to see this film because it is closure to an entire series that I really just want closure on now.
Yeah.
And I really want to see the conclusion to it. I've read all the books and I'd like to see that final battle, that epic conclusion, and then it's done, you know?
Exactly.
And we can look at it on DVD or anything else, and we can watch it from beginning to end, and it's a complete series, you know? And I try and look back. I mean, so many films fall down on their third film.
Mm.
Harry Potter was one of those rare examples where the third film was better than the first two films, you know? Mm. And so you sit there and go, trilogies, you know, you look at Lethal Weapon 3, Karate Kid 3, you know, the threes are always seem to be the problem, and they didn't seem to affect the Harry Potters. They just kept going, you know?
Yeah.
I think I just wanted to bring that up. It just really occurred to me this week, and I thought that really is a...
Well, let's hold the praise until we've seen the next one.
Well, as I say, this isn't about the review of that film, because we don't know what the film is actually going to be like, but the actual effort of what they've done is still a remarkable thing that should be praised. I can't wait to see the film, and we will review the film here. We might even bring Celine on for that show, considering that she was also on Deathly Hallows Part 1, because now it will be our chance to kind of have that closure of putting the two films together.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see if you can get her to go see that film.
Come on. I know she wants to see it. She wants to see it just so she can see the ending of the film that she didn't get to see the first time around. Maybe that's what Warner Brothers is banking on. All right. With that being said, read my phone. Let's do a list of five. What do you think?
Why not?
This week, our list of five is five comedies with a tender underbelly. So films like Bridesmaids that give us that kind of feeling of a film where we go, it's funny, it's great, and it also is a little bit sweet and has something to say. All right, so let me just bring up my list here. I've got it on my phone. Here we go. All right, and I will start us off because this is much more my wheelhouse than it is Josh's. So I'll get it started off and say my number five is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
The 2008 film with Jason Segel, which we've talked about during the review as well. I really love that film.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, and I think it's one of the rare Apatow films, or Apatow Productions, I should say, that actually does have a really strong heart because of Jason Segel. Jason Segel is a very sympathetic character. So because you've got that, you can kind of follow along with it. I liked Funny People, but Adam Sandler wasn't sympathetic. You really didn't like him very much. He was a bit of a douche, you know?
Yeah.
So you're kind of following Seth Rogen, but Seth Rogen was kind of a douche. All right, so you're number five.
My number five is a film which doesn't really fit into the category, but I just want to remind people, because people forget a lot. Blues Brothers.
Essentially,
everyone loves the Blues Brothers, but they are doing everything that they do in that film for an orphanage.
Absolutely.
Just remember that.
And they're brothers who stick by each other, no matter what.
Exactly. No, there's a sense of things that people forget in that film, because by the end of it, we have 1,000 cops with guns facing them. But essentially, they were doing the right thing, and I just wanted to use that as a vehicle for that.
No, I think Blues Brothers is actually a good example. I didn't even think of the Blues Brothers, so that's a good effort. My number four is actually stretching into my wife's territory a little bit, but I've had to bring it up because I think when you think about it, it kind of is the epitome of this category, which is Love Actually. Now, the reason why I bring up Love Actually is because my wife actually looked at me and goes, is it actually a comedy? Because we think about the dramatic side of it, which is, you know, the husband cheating on his wife and stuff like that. But at the same time, you've got Hugh Grant as the prime minister doing what he does. Mm. You've got Colin Firth doing what he does with his... Yeah. And it's actually got... And, of course, Bill Nighy as the aged rocker who basically, in the radio interview, goes, oh, don't buy my new album, it's just shit. Which I just think is gold. It's a very muddled film that has problems in its structure, But the performances are really good in that film, and it has a lot of really good humor. You don't like it, obviously, but there are a lot of people who do. And I think that I really needed to put a film on there that I think kind of hits all the markers in this in this particular category. And I think Love Actually, that's why it's not number one, of course. It's down on the list, but I think it does hit all the markers on this. Yeah. Your number four.
My number four is I Heart Huckabees.
I still haven't seen it. Can you
believe it? Yeah, I can. And look, not everyone likes the film. It's a very complex and bizarre kind of humor. And it gets quite dark in certain
places.
David
Russell actually was really disappointed because he made the film.
Yeah.
And he actually said it was never turned out the way he wanted it to turn out. He was
It's weird because it's just, to me, it really fits. It's so stupid and it's so out of its mind by the end of the film that you're not quite sure, you know, sort of where they were planning to take it. But there's a real sense, especially in the last sense, one of the few films that I really like Mark Wahlberg in, because he's not quite intelligence level perhaps up with the as a character.
He's playing the type.
Character wise he may not be there, but there's a real sense of kind of like he's a really decent guy. And the last shot of the film where they're sitting down and planning to do something together is a real heartwarming scene between the two.
I do actually have to watch it, and I actually do own it. It's downstairs. Just haven't gotten to it. It's one of those films where you sit there and look at it. It's the same way I felt when I was talking to Richard from The Real Bits yesterday, when he said that he just saw Tree of Life at the Sydney Film Festival, and he said it's one of the most amazing films he's ever seen. And I just looked at him and said, I do want to see it, but it just feels like homework. Yeah. And I Heart Huckabees has always kind of felt that way to me as well. It's always felt a little bit like homework.
Yeah.
I will get to it, I promise, at some stage. Mm. All right, my number three is our opening clip, is The Sure Thing, which is, for me, one of my favorite films. I just love it. It's not perfect, and it does have its problems, but it is just a really fun road film about two people discovering each other and actually discovering what is important.
Yeah.
And during that time, John Cusack does some very funny stuff, and there's some very funny moments in this film. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, I do recommend it. It's Rob Reiner's second feature film. Mm. So remember on our lists of sophomore films, I actually put it on that list too, so because it is his sophomore film, and it was actually a really cute little rom-com, for lack of a better word. Okay, your number three.
My number three is Little Miss Sunshine.
Great film.
It's a beautiful film. It is. It touches in some horrible places and covers some really upsetting subject material, but it's your attachment to her the whole way through, this little tiny bundle of joy that just seems to be completely unfazed by any of the stuff around her. And it's like, it's also really beautiful to see the family pull together no matter what. And it's just certain scenes, like the scene where the kid that's been mute figures out that he can't get into the Air Force and he just loses it. And all it takes is for him to go and sit down beside him and he's just back on board again. Yeah. And it's just, it's great because they're all there for her and it just works.
Yeah, and I really like that film. It's a really, really sweet film.
Yeah.
My number two is the 1950 film Harvey with James Stewart.
Oh, man. Oh, dude. Harvey.
Harvey is just genius. It is a funny film, and it
I can't believe I forgot that
the
one.
The heart of Harvey is James Stewart, and that character of Elwood P. Dowd is so sweet and so innocent that you just are in love with him, and you'll follow him to the end of the earth because he's just so nice.
He's just an amazingly wonderful person, and it's just such a sweet movie. I can't watch that film without tearing up. That's just like fantastic. By the end of the film, I'm just like, oh, man, it's so beautiful.
It is. It's a fantastic film. If you haven't seen it, it is well worth having a look at.
I challenge the most violently tempered person in the world to sit down in front of that film and not feel something, because I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible to get through that film without feeling something.
Callison said we could have also called this comedies with a heart of gold. Yeah, that's another way of doing it.
Okay.
All right, you're number two.
My number two is a personal favorite of mine, and definitely not going to be on everybody's list, but there's a certain attachment, I think, being the fact that he is kind of review-esque kind of a mentality internally, is High Fidelity, which again is a Cusack film.
High Fidelity.
And it's just, he has this detachment that he thinks is so incredibly foolproof, but he has a love for the girl that the girl of the film that he just doesn't get for the first three quarters of the film. And it's for me, it's that moment where he's listing the best things that he loves about her, and there's that You know, he runs through that list, but that and also the scene where he gets off the train, he's like, it's a sneaky girl move she pulled, because he's talking about how they broke up, and he's like, it's a sneaky girl move and I fell for it because she's much smarter than I am. That's just really cute.
I loved High Fidelity. I find it interesting. There is actually an interesting through line through your films, which is they're all comedies with a slightly darker edge to them.
Yeah.
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
That's very good, because High Fidelity has a
I think realistically, comedies that just have nothing but love and no edge to them just don't work. You can't connect to a film like that.
No, and this is why you need things like Bridesmaids and so forth, which have that heart. That's what we're talking about.
Well, have the realistic. Yeah. Like, you attach the characters because none of them are perfect. Mm. You know what I mean? They're all damaged people, like you said. Yep. And it's that concept of kind of attaching to someone who's trying to do the best with who they are. And it's like, you can attach to something like that. You can't attach to just a frivolous movie like The Hangover or something like that. It's like, there's nothing to attach to.
And speaking of that, that brings me to my number one, which is Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, thank Christ. I thought you were about to say Hangover. I was like, get out.
Four Weddings and a Funeral is actually one of... In fact, when I mentioned this list to my lovely wife...
Yeah.
Without even batting an eyelid, she went Four Weddings and a Funeral. Because it is a film which effortlessly jumps from the line of fluffy comedy, fun, to tragedy, to fluffy comedy, without even making you bat an eyelid. And you just go along for the ride, because you're just following in the lives of these people and what they do. And the film follows these people as they go through four weddings and a funeral throughout the course of the film. And it is just a joy. And it is the best thing Hugh Grant has ever done in his career. From the opening scene, where I think the word fuck is uttered more times than any other film in history in a short period of time, to, of course, the speech at the one funeral of the film, which doesn't leave a dry eye in the house. Mm. I mean, it's just so heartfelt and so sensitive. It's a fantastic film. And if you haven't seen it, this is the crowning glory of Richard Curtis's writing. This is, you know, he went on to write and direct things like Love Actually and Notting Hill and all this stuff. Yeah. This is Richard Curtis at his finest in his writing. All right, what's your number one? Hit me with it.
Steve Zissou's The Life Aquatica, which is a Will Anderson film. For three quarters of the film, for probably a good three quarters of the film, there is no emotion. This guy has the most emptiest nature you can possibly put into a person, and it's all this kind of like bizarre world, which is kind of trying to be the Jacques Cousteau kind of a thing, where it was this kind of unbelievable.
Oh, hold on. Sorry, I missed it. I didn't hear the second part of what you said. The Life Aquatic. Seen The Life Aquatic. I have seen The Life Aquatic. I love The Life Aquatic.
Exactly, but it's that final wrap-up scene where sort of he does this first kind of like... sort of moment where he does something selfless and actually tries to help everyone else. And that scene with him walking out, and it's like everybody's coming together and everybody's walking. I don't care who you are. It's like at the end of that movie, you're like, aw, good on you guys.
I have to say, I also really liked Anderson's other film, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah. Now, I've never seen that, because
if you like The Life Aquatic, you're going to love The Royal Tenenbaums. Yeah. They are as wacky as each other. They are really out of their minds.
It's also the visual style of it and everything that I love about the film. But there is just something about it that you just feel like he is a full champion by the end of the film. And like, he's such a loser throughout the entire film. You can't help but love him by the end.
Oh, good choice. Once again, a slight dark streak running through it. Now, I do have an honorary mentions list here, because as we were going through trying to create this list, my wife kept throwing out rom-coms, of course, because you can't help but delve into rom-com territory with this sort of list.
Yeah.
So I said to her, why don't I just throw out a little supplementary list here? I've created a little supplementary list that I've just called three of the best rom-coms.
Yeah.
All right. So if you really feel like going into rom-com territory, here's three very quickly for you that you can jump on. When Harry Met Sally, probably one of the greatest rom-coms ever made.
Yeah.
Pretty Woman, the film that really launched Julia Roberts' career, and The Philadelphia Story from 1940, which is Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, and James Stewart, which is just one of the classic all-time screwball comedy rom-coms.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's three straight off the bat. Those are straight from my lovely wife, Katie, and she says, go enjoy. It's her favorite genre of film. So so there you go. There's our list of five. Hopefully there's something in there for you. What's the film next week? Do we have any idea? Oh, yes. Next week is going to be a challenge, actually. If we can make it happen, It may just be one of them, but we're trying to make this happen. We want to try and do Cars 2 and Kung Fu Panda 2.
Wow.
Because they're both opening this week, and it's kind of like the Battle of the Animation Giants.
Yeah.
I think it would be kind of interesting to do both films and put them head-to-head. This is Pixar versus DreamWorks. So.
That's going to be an interesting conversation as well, because everyone I've talked to about Kung Fu Panda...
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So these are sequels to two of their beloved films. So it'll be very interesting to see. Both of the first films made buckets of money, and they were both the. I mean, let's face it, Kung Fu Panda was really the start of DreamWorks nipping at Pixar's heels, I should say.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting. If we can pull that off, it will all be depending on time as to whether or not we can get to both films or not. But we will see how we go. If not, we will just do one of them. And I think if we had to choose between the two, we would probably go
Cars
because it's Pixar.
Yeah.
Just purely because I don't think Josh and I can ever miss a Pixar film.
Yeah.
it's just as simple as that. Yeah. All right. Agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today? Agree or disagree with our choice of lists, our films, or anything else? Send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. Or if you are cheap or outside of the United States, or outside of Australia, as in you are in the United States, you can use our Skype ID, which is just geek, actually, all one word. Yeah. Try and keep your voicemails tight to a minute, on topic, and always make sure you mention which show they're for at the beginning. We'd love to hear from you guys. Send it in. You can get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, do all that sort of stuff. My Tumblr account, now I know that I've been really slack on getting that Tumblr account updated. I just went through the other day and I updated it, finally.
Hooray!
So if you go to my Tumblr account of the year with movies, you'll actually see that I've now put in at least the title and at least a one or two sentence comment on every film for the last month.
Nice.
So you'll actually, it's all up to date now. So you can go over there and check that out. You can find all the links at geekactually.com. There's a follow us button on the side of the page. Just click on that and you'll find all of the links to everything we do. Make sure you check out our other show, the Geek Actually Podcast, which is our Weekend Geek show. Both shows can be found on Stitcher Radio if you want to stream it that way, or you can find them on iTunes. Just search for their particular names. If you type in Geek Actually, you actually get both shows. Because they're produced by Geek Actually, so you get both. Now, you can also watch this, record this live, as we said before. Every Saturday, we start around the 12 p.m.-ish mark, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. We record Geek Actually first, followed by Film Actually. So Film Actually's start time is loose. Follow us on Twitter, and we always tweet out when we're starting. So it's the easiest way to do it. GeekActually.com/live is the live feed. Now, some shout-outs. Josh, you got something else to sell.
All right, a website. That's right. RawDLC.com. It's a gaming website. Check it out. We've got a whole bunch of new stuff, including a very high-res cool trailer, which is the start of what we are eventually going to make a very professional-looking show, hopefully.
It looks good. I've seen a bit of the first video. It looks real good.
And you guys can feel free to jump in and comment on that. Join the waves of people that have decided to take both opposite ends and either hate us vehemently over a video, which I'm not quite sure why you would do that, but okay, or jump on the other side and say it was a cool video. So either way, throw up your comments. We'd love to hear from you.
Cool. All right. A couple other friends that we'd like to shout out to as well. Charlie and Brad are back, baby. They were the former hosts of the Movie Fan House podcast, which we were big fans of. They are back with their new site called reboundradio.com, and they're a real conglomerate of different people who are all putting stuff up there, and they have a new podcast starting soon. Further details as that comes up. Nice. Our other favorite people in the whole wide world, boys, we love you dearly, weekendronin.com is the home for the Real Junkies podcast, R-E-E-L. You can find that on iTunes or find out all information going by going to weekendronin.com. These boys are a movie podcast like us. They like to drink tequila. They're just a bunch of guys who really love films, and they just tell you what they think of it. And sometimes we disagree with them, and sometimes we don't. So they're really, really good. And I like to correct them on Twitter, but they got me the other day. They were the ones who corrected me about Havoc's relationship with Scott Summers. Anyway, that's a whole different story for a different show. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show. Yes, my dear, we still plug you because we love you. What can I do? We shower people with love. Thursdays on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM, or if you want to listen to an archived episode, because if you can't catch them live, you can listen. Go to RadioFremantle.com and look for their show, which is the Funky Film Show. Now, Josh Spencer is the artist extraordinaire who did our caricatures on our website and our cover arts. Go check him out at attackninja.blogspot.com. He does a lot more than just caricatures, and his artwork is really good. Go out and check him out. All right, we are finishing the show this week with a track from the Bridesmaid soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Now, there is no real score as such that they have released, but we thought we'd have to finish the show with the Wilson Phillips song Hold On, which has gained incredible popularity again since Bridesmaids came out. In fact, it shot straight back to the charts.
Hooray!
Hooray! And then, look, it's a good song. I like it. It's good. It's a lot of fun.
Get off your horse. No,
it's fun. God, you're a black soul sometimes. All right, so we're gonna go out with this track here. We want to thank everybody. We want to thank our chat room for joining us. I want to thank you, Josh, of course, and I want to thank myself, because if it wasn't for me, we wouldn't have a show.
Obviously.
And I want to thank all the listeners out there who make this show possible. Remember, if you do want to support the show in any way, we do have a donations link on the side of the page. All your donations, whether it be $2. Up to whatever you want to give, help us support the show, keep us in coffee, hard drives, and all the things that we need to keep this going. And if you are willing to subscribe, we also have a subscribe button where you can just subscribe for a $2 reoccurring monthly fee, and then you don't have to think about it again. And that little $2 a month can help. Every cent helps.
True that.
So do you get anything for your subscription? Not really, but you get the satisfaction of knowing that you helped us. With that on said, I think we should finish this, don't you?
Yeah. All right. Let's call it a night.
We're going to say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we love you guys, and we'll see you all next week. Someday somebody's going to make you want to turn around and say goodbye. Until then, baby, are you going to let them hold you down and make you cry? Don't you know?